Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. Give the active people in your life something they'll truly appreciate. Performance apparel from Vuori. Whether they're into running, surfing, hiking, or even just casual walks around the block, there's something for everyone. And if you're not sure what to gift them, you can't go wrong with something from Vuori's Dream Knit collection. It's the perfect gift and so comfortable. Get 20% off your first purchase today at Vuori, Vuori.com/Spotify.
Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor's going to distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.com. FM to get started.
You're tuning into the online broadcast network AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
I just have to say, I feel, like, so pumped up. And then this song.
Yeah, no, the intro's always great, and then this song is an immediate downer.
I feel like we comment on it every time, and maybe we shouldn't, but
we should choose
anyway.
we should choose a different intro song.
We will. You guys should tweet us and tell us
if you know a good intro song
we should play instead of the song. Because we are here, with no further ado, this is, of course, After Buzz. We are here doing another episode of The Man in the High Castle. This is episode 6, season 1, Three Monkeys. I am your host, Courtney Henderson. And as always, joined by, oh gosh, lovely, handsome, dapper. We'll add that this time.
A new adjective every show.
Yes.
Handsome, dapper.
Who are you guys?
I'm Keith W. Black, and you can find me all over the internet at Keith W. Black.
And I'm Taylor Bolt. You can find me on Twitter at Taybolt. That's T-A-Y-B-O-L-D-T. And on Instagram at T-Bolt, also B-O-L-D-T.
All right.
Wonderful. Before we actually talk about, like, specifics, I just want to know what your actual kind of overall thought of this episode was. Because I feel very different about it myself than I have the rest.
This one in particular?
This one in particular.
Now I'm hesitant to say, because if we have very different opinions?
Well, I mean, you're allowed to think differently than me because we don't actually live in this alternate world.
Sure.
So you can have your own opinion.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that were unsettling. The first thing I'd like to say is I actually really liked this episode, which I thought was interesting sort of in retrospect, because it seems like a lot of rising action and not a lot of decisive action, if that makes sense. There's a couple of big things that kind of happened, but it's still mostly just like they're about to happen.
There were a lot of things that were set up to happen.
Exactly.
I feel like nothing happened in this entire episode.
I really hate setup episodes in general, but this episode gave us, for the first time, I think just a really solid grasp of what life is going to be like, especially in the Great Reich, in the eastern part of the country, of just what the culture is. It's not just like the skyscrapers with the swastika on them. Like, we actually got to see, like, suburban life, kind of.
Which still felt like, you know, a building with a swastika on it to me.
Sure, yeah, no, it did.
I mean, kid, Thomas, I think is the oldest son's name.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he literally had it on his arm.
Right, he's Hitler Youth.
Hitler Youth, yeah.
Yeah.
That's part of the wardrobe.
Yeah, you have to have a red flag on
to
your
me, the redeeming, I mean, I won't call the episode boring, because it wasn't, because of the setup, but, I mean, for goodness sakes, the last 30 seconds which I felt like were predictable, were still exciting. And for me, that's kind of like saved it. Even though like I knew it was coming.
You know what I mean? 30 seconds. It might have been because the first hour was kind of like meh. But the last 30 seconds, I was like leaning forward, like, what is about to happen? And I don't think they disappointed there. But yeah, definite setup episode. But we've got a lot of cool stuff coming.
My favorite thing, and we can talk about this first because I said so, Joe. I want to talk about Joe. And that's where the episode starts. He shows up for VA Day, which is also Veterans Day. It's the same thing, in case you guys are wondering.
We actually had a VE Day in America that stood for Victory in Europe. And it was sort of celebrated right after World War II to celebrate the Allies' victory. So VA Day, I took to just be Victory in the Americas. Victory in America's Day.
Well,
but it seems like it's sort of like the 4th of July-ish.
Veterans Day. It's November.
Pardon?
VA Day is Veterans Day.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. Give the active people in your life something they'll truly appreciate. Performance apparel from Vuori. Whether they're into running, surfing, hiking, or even just casual walks around the block, there's something for everyone. And if you're not sure what to gift them, you can't go wrong with something from Vuori's Dream Knit collection. It's the perfect gift and so comfortable. Get 20% off your first purchase today at Vuori, Vuori.com/Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Rakuten. Are you ready to shop? Rakuten's Big Give Week is back. Get 15% cash back at hundreds of stores, including Headliners, Ulta, Ray-Ban, and Canon. Rakuten is how in-the-know shoppers get the best savings. They shop the brands they love and earn cash back on top of deals during Big Give Week, May 6th to May 13th. The cash back rates are even bigger. I'll be shopping for Adidas and Fenty. You can save on everything you need for summer, like clothing, outdoor gear, and travel. Join today for free and get an extra 10% cash back boost. That's an extra 10% cash back on top of Big Give Week's 15% cash back. You won't see higher cash back rates than these. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app. Rakuten. Shoppers get it.
You mean in the show, or do you mean our reality?
In real, I thought both.
I think it goes by the fact that when in our reality we took over Europe and we celebrated it as VE Day, as you previously said.
Yeah, VE Day. I think so. I mean, it could be a reference to Veterans Day, but it seems like it happens in the summer, right?
Yeah, and we got the
summer-ish.
And we got the indication when by seeing the discrepancy between the Japanese celebration of it versus the Germans. The Germans celebrate it openly in the Americas. For them, that's a huge accomplishment. Whereas the Japanese said, "Oh, we don't necessarily celebrate VA Day, but we do celebrate Navy Army Day, which is our combined,
which is like control
of
sort of like a veterans territory."
Uncertain. And I don't like being uncertain.
I took it as a parallel to VE Day, which was sort of like
But that doesn't exist in this world.
Not anymore. No, so VE Day existed in our universe.
Right.
Where we won over Europe, where we won against the Nazis in Europe. So it was like victory in Europe. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of celebrated for a while after
VA
World War II.
VA is for veteran. Like that's like I looked that up. Oh, I mean, I knew it, but I looked it up also.
Yeah, but look up VE Day, and then I took it as
Victory
in America.
What I'm saying is, all right.
I think it could be both.
Well, I mean, I think that's what Veterans Day is. I mean, well, let's just talk about something else because we don't know, look it up.
It's one of the two. We'll look it up. Tweet us
if you know.
If you know, please tweet us.
And tell us.
Yeah, I'll answer your
but
comments on YouTube.
In either respect, it's definitely sort of like a very patriotic, family-oriented, at least from, that's what we get from Obergruppenführer, German holiday that seems to celebrate the victory, their victory in the war, because we see the Führer talking about, he's giving this big sort of speech to the nation, as it were, talking about on this day, such and such, however long ago, we won, basically.
Yeah.
We won the war. So it's a very patriotic holiday for the Nazis, which is... it's disturbing.
But it looks like the 4th of July. I will give you that.
That's why it's disturbing.
That was the thing I really did not like about
it. Yeah.
And still, even with the references to baseball, which is the quintessential, like, the embodiment of America. Like, yeah. Baseball is our sport. It's what defines us. They used it during World War II to see who was and wasn't a spy, or if you were actually an ally, because they would ask you trivia about baseball. And if you didn't know it, then you weren't an American. So
right.
For them to go out and actually be talking about DiMaggio, yeah. And then, you know, Obergruppenführer wings a baseball at his son as though... And then he says, you know, nobody gets there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Right.
It's almost directed also towards his kid as a lesson, like, I'm the man of this home, regardless of anything. And to me, like you were saying earlier, this show kind of bugged you because there's no real rise. It was just mostly rising action.
It was a little boring. It was just very slow. And I don't want to call it boring because, like, setup is necessary. But it's, like, reestablishing things. But for me, this part is actually the most interesting because... We don't know a lot about Joe, and we learn a lot about him.
Yeah, well, right.
In this episode.
And what I was going to say is I really enjoyed this episode for the reason that it was such narrative into John Smith's life. We got to see so much and learn so much about John Smith in this VA Day celebration with his kids, with his family. And before this, he's been kind of a mystique. We don't really know anything too much about him. We know he's intelligent. We know that he's a high-ranking official. He's well-off. But we know he's a self-starter. Yeah, he has a family. But we don't know.
And it's structured.
And there's so much irony in that. He's living what was, or kind of is, or was the American dream at the time of, like, this little white picket fence and a family and a dog. And they eat apple pie. And they have lunch outside on a picnic table. And I loved the references to baseball. There was a thing that I just wanted to bring up because I literally wrote it down as my favorite moment in the episode was when he sort of like casually mentions he thinks baseball is a boring sport.
Yeah.
Like he's just like, this is a boring sport. I prefer soccer or like track, or I think were the things
and,
that he said.
But the thing I loved about that was, to me, that really, that whole conversation, like, of course he doesn't like baseball. You know, like, he didn't go to college. He went straight into the workforce. He didn't go into the military. You know what I mean? Like, he's everything that... the Fuhrer's son is not.
Are we talking about
Joe?
About Joe, right?
Yeah,
right.
Joe. You know, so you know, Thomas is like asking him all these questions, which, you know, so we're like learning a little bit. The thing I thought was interesting, actually, which surprised me, was clearly Joe had never been there before. Like, Joe had never met the family, and from some of our previous conversations about sort of why or how he has this relationship with. John Smith, it was one of those where it was like, oh, okay, so this isn't like some family friend's kid, or, you know, this isn't somebody that he's taken under his wing this much before.
Yeah,
this is a new step for their relationship.
Do you think it could possibly bring us more into the light of the relationship between Rudolph and John Smith, showing they really went in depth about the war relation and how they were bonded in war, and they were bonded at the camps, and John's Joe's father has been alluded to a couple times, but he doesn't really know anything about his father, and he kind of, this is all I, you know, could really get into, and his dad was really good at, and such respect John Smith has for people who have done terrible things in war, thinking it's for the greater good.
Right.
I think that maybe that's why, is John Smith and Joe's dad were relatable through war, and that's why they don't know the family, because it was a war relationship. It wasn't a home relationship.
Right.
And so Joe just feels a little bit of an obligation to this man because he knows his father.
Well, and maybe his father died in war.
Yeah.
And so, but he knew, of course, that this man that he was at war with had this son and now was fatherless and didn't have that figure, or, you know.
Right. Well, sort of
there's in. Yeah, there is a lot. This did open the door to find out a lot more about that relationship.
Possibly, because there's, we'll see, because it might be it might be tenuous. We learn later, not to skip
ahead.
Well,
I think that the whole inviting him over was a test.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean.
For sure.
I think the way that he handled Joe with Rudolph, the way that he handled the whole thing. I mean, spending the night, like all of that, it felt very calculated.
Mm-hmm.
You
and
know what I mean?
The spending the night.
Yeah.
I mean, that just went to show his wife is such an ally. And he even mentioned, you have to, if you're trusting your life with somebody, you've got to trust them with everything.
Right.
Yeah.
And not only his wife has back, she's propagating his entire investigation into Joe and into Rudolph.
Right.
And, I mean, that's terrifying in its own. Are the kids, is Thomas in it, and the little children along for the... this deception? Is Max the puppy involved in this
deception?
Could
be.
Is this
Max,
a Nazi puppy?
I think Max is behind
Max.
The whole thing.
Anybody, he's the man in the castle.
He's the overgroup in dream.
Yeah,
there you go.
Well, we figured it out, folks.
Yeah, shows up. We don't need the rest of the episodes. Just kidding. We do.
I really do. I need
just past
episode
halfway.
7 now. I know, right? We still have so much more, and it's so tantalizing because it's all out there. We just can't watch it until we film these. I guess for the same reasons that the episode was slow, I enjoyed it. It was definitely more relaxed, but all of these little glimpses and stuff, this is the only opportunity that we're probably going to get to see some of this stuff.
Of course.
Because everything's not at peace, but at rest. You know what I mean? Like, there's, Oprah Group and Fuhrer, John Smith, is plotting and scheming this entire episode, but we don't really know that as the audience members. To us, we see this as a pleasant national holiday, and it gives eerie insight to what life is like, which is part of the appeal of this show, I think.
Yeah.
That's at least one of the biggest sort of marketing pushes for the show, is that what would it be like in this alternate world? And so for that reason, I think it's such an intrinsic part of the show at a base level. I think it makes for a good episode. Now, if episode 7 is the same thing, then
it's too much.
It's too much.
All things in moderation.
Exactly.
All things in moderation.
So for sure.
That made me think of, going back to like being calculated and also the way life was, grandmother's coming into town, we have to go pick her up at the airport, come with me, like, you know, help. What was the wording he used? Something about, you know, basically, managing her.
Taking some of the fire, that was a phrase he used,
you know, and it was just like, okay, well, some things have never changed, you know, because that's kind of, I think, how a lot of people, at least stereotypically, you know, like, stereotypically that is still very present today. But, of course, her flight was canceled. But they ran into Rudy.
Yeah.
How interesting and how just, you know,
I just really,
coincidental.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the depth of...
Totally. We'll call it a coincidence.
Yeah.
But I think that going forward, we can absolutely look at the fact that John Smith, he's a calculated man. He doesn't make any move in his life without it being thought through. Everything that he does, even... I mean, if he has any sympathies or any breaks of will, it's letting his son have a little wine at VA Day. Which, to me, I was like, oh, that's a little surprising, showing that he's showing some fatherly attributes and not just a calculated...
I mean, he only makes concessions when they don't matter. He only makes concessions over tiny things that, yes, you can study at the breakfast table. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can have half a glass of Riesling at our picnic. But
at home, going nowhere, yeah.
But for anything that's a matter of state, he's a very decided man, and I think...
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
Maybe that's like, just if we go into his character a little bit, like maybe that's a coping mechanism. Yeah. Like he makes small concessions so that he doesn't make any big ones or something like that. I don't know.
But do you think that was a small concession, or because I'm under the belief that wasn't the giving of the wine wasn't just a part of my son wants some wine. It's VA Day. He's old enough. He's been good. I'll give him this concession. I think that was more to build up that feeling and that mood that he was trying to establish at the home of carelessness, relaxed. Everyone's having fun. We're all friends here.
Right.
Because that's the only way he was going to be able to get information out of Rudolph. And again, a calculated move by showing the vulnerability of a family.
Now that you've said it, I think that's absolutely what it is.
Yeah.
I think that he's, you know, like you said, he's so calculated. He, of course, because that's so laid back. It's like, hey, we're all friends.
Yeah. We're all hanging out.
You
have
can
some
have
more.
Tommy.
You can have some
wine.
I
have some
throw a baseball around, and then maybe Rudolph will tell me why he flew from the Pacific States on a diplomatic visa.
And asked him numerous times throughout.
Yes.
Numerous times. And it started off as a very casual and pleasant, friendly, oh, wait, what have you been? What have you been up to? Have you been kept busy? Some more. Are you interrogating me? Yes, I am interrogating you. And that's the point where you're like, oh wow.
Oh. And then it's going on.
So... when, of course, he asks Joe, what, you know, when all is said and done and it's very clear that, you know, Rudolph has been lying, but he has that internal conflict that, kind of like you were saying, like, he doesn't want to make concessions when it comes to, like, matters of the state kind of a thing. And this is probably the first time that he's come close to it, because it's like he said, you know, or like we sit up here, we have trust for each other as hosts, et cetera, you know, and so it's like, once you've gone through that with somebody, you're like, no, like, you're a good guy. But then it's like, okay, but then why, when we go to dinner after shooting, are you lying to my face all night? You know what I mean? It's like that, you know, because it's like, I know, like, we work together, like, and war especially. I mean, that's like the ultimate, you know,
the
kind
ultimate
of bond.
Yeah, because it's the ultimate coworkers.
I mean, you're literally putting your life in their hands, you know, so to do that and then now be in a situation almost where actually his life is in your hands still or again, you know, and to ask Joe. You know, and that's what I think was, like, part of the test.
You know, I think so. I think especially after we're talking about him giving the wine as being part of, like, a calculated plan, I think that it's sort of having Joe not necessarily dig his own grave in a way, but set his own paradigm. You know what I mean? Like, establish the rules for himself. For because I think that, you know, he's scheming for the
Thomas
reveal at the end of the episode.
Thomas is totally in on it because Thomas is the one that took him in the office.
Yeah, Thomas is totally in on it. They're all
you know what I mean?
And he was very uppity on the whole "my dad trusts us" thing. Like, he that was a proud. It was a proud moment for him.
It was like, you do this for me, I'll give you some wine.
That's what it was.
So it comes down to Thomas being an alcoholic.
He's a true parent if he's bribing, I think. Yeah. Right.
Well, I'm gonna throw this one at you. What about the option that he's been in a situation where Rudolph calls him his mentor. He calls John Smith his mentor. So he's like, oh, this is my mentor. So there's definitely the issue of, you were turning in your mentee. You were turning in somebody that he almost looked like, I've took care of him in war. Like, we bonded, but not only did we bond, but I bonded with him as kind of like his subservient that he was protecting. And now Joe is somebody else that he's been kind of cultivating almost to be another mentee. And so he's going to Joe in a situation of, okay, well, my last guy kind of betrayed me. I'm now having an internal conflict right now because I have to decide, do I return him over or do I stand with what I strongest believe in, which he mentioned earlier, is now in a better world. You see the conflict with Rudolph, where Rudolph is still, you know, he doesn't feel good about what he did, and that's why he's helping Togomi. But John, not at all. John feels no remorse. He's like, this is why, no, the country is, the world is better now. So he's like, all right, well, we've got a difference of opinion. I'm going to ask Joe. Is Joe along my beliefs? Is country for Joe? Is he going to say turn him in? Or is Joe on the belief of being weak, relationships are strong? So I think that conversation with Joe is more of an assessment of, okay, I failed with Rudolph. Let's see if this next guy, Joe, can be the mentee that Rudolph
has. So you're thinking that because Joe suggested that, you know, emotions can't get in the way, that it's actually, he's not sort of on the chopping block, like he sort of endeared himself.
He passed the test.
Yeah, I think that that's why he didn't just get shot down in the home, you know, and he just got turned over. I mean, odds are he's going to talk to him later. You don't just turn him. He didn't turn him over to the SS. He didn't turn him over to anybody. He just turned him over to his troops.
I thought they were, like, literally going to take him into the woods and shoot him, like, interrogate him and shoot him, like he discussed.
They'll probably interrogate him. I don't know if they, because he's not just like a common criminal. He probably has some information. They'll want to know who he's working with on the other side.
Right, and I think they'll get the information. I totally thought, because maybe I just took it way too literally, because that was actually the conversation that they had.
Yeah, Joe, take him to the woods and shoot him.
I mean, but when you know, they said their goodbyes and they opened the door and clearly he was not going home.
Yeah, right.
You know, they walk off and they're, you know, Joe, they're watching him leave and be taken. And I don't remember what the Fuhrer said, but then Joe goes, you know, sometimes you have to make sacrifices. So he's like, you're right, you can't let emotions get in the way. And Joe says, sometimes the sacrifice has to be made. And so I took that to be like, he was sacrificing his friendship and life and, you know, of Rudolph for the greater this country. And Joe was passing the test, you know. But he obviously was set up to, like, look in the cupboard, right? And
I believe he was intrigued. He was set up from the episode before when he was very blatant about his setting the envelope with the grasshopper into his briefcase. Hey, Joe. Like, putting it like,
how convenient.
I've got this confidential paperwork.
It was like, bait.
Yeah, it was definitely bait.
So I'm wondering, if Joe passed one test, did he fail this test? Or is this somehow, now he might be privy to this information?
Because I have a prediction, so we'll get to that.
Yeah, okay.
For predictions.
Sounds good.
Let's actually kind of switch gears and talk about Juliana and
Sounds
Frank.
Good.
Specifically, again, with the cinematography, I really liked how it opened up with Joe and all of them, and it was like the bright 4th of July, you know, backyard, yeah, lightheartedness. And then the first scene you see of the other side with Juliana is very dark, very...
It's like a sepia filter.
Yeah.
Everything in San Francisco.
And, you know, I mean, the dark clothes and just very mundane and just kind of, like, dreary. Mm-hmm. Again, like, I thought that was very specific and very intentional.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? And I like that they do that because it just evokes an emotion before anything has even happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of... One thing that I've loved so much throughout this entire season is being able to see sort of the juxtaposition between these two, between the Great Reich and the Pacific States. And I don't think that it gets any more stark than in this episode when you're watching what's essentially like a really patriotic, colorful backyard mm-hmm. celebration with apple pie in one half of the country. And the other half of the country, they're like, there's an investigation, they're mourning the assassination attempt on their prince, and it's all very dark and very drab and very industrial. You know, we see mm-hmm. just the shots that they chose to show us were all very industrial, from the Inspector Keto tracking down, and he's so great in this episode. He's so great in general now, because you tense up as soon as you see him in any scene. Man. You're like, something bad's gonna happen.
It's about to go down.
You put him in all these scenes with these characters that you're attached to now, like Tagomi and Frank, and as soon as you see him, it's just like my spine seizes up because I know something bad is gonna happen.
Yes, always.
But I thought that a lot happened. A lot happened, again, setup stuff, but a lot happened in San Francisco. Probably more happened in the Pacific States in general than in the Great Reich, though I don't think we got as much culture.
Again, I think, like you were saying, like the way that they celebrate. You know what I mean? Like, it's showing sort of a business as usual, even though it's VA Day.
And I think it's a great representation of the national perspective and how in each Germany versus Japan, we have two people on either sides that are polar opposites kind of in what their ideals are. So we've got Kido and Tagomi. So we've got Kido, who is country. And then we've got Tagomi, who is peace and prosperity. He's more of the focus of the values of what the Japanese people have. And Tagomi is more of protecting his country, the militaristic aspects of it.
That's a good way of putting it.
And then on the other side, we've got John Smith, who is the country. Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's his first and foremost, his militaristic aspect. And then you've got Rudolph, who... was country, but then how he's wavering and he's looking more at peace.
I think he's totally peace. Yeah.
So it's very interesting to see those dualities on each side where they don't agree with each other. And when discussing, you mentioned the prince, and they're like, oh, the prince, their feelings for the prince, German versus Japan, are drastically different. In it, the guy who was asking, I think they were in the bar room or when they're having the conference, and Juliana's in there and she's kind of eavesdropping as she's serving. And he mentions, well, how's the crown prince? And they're like, oh, he's great. And he's like, oh, he's doing great. Saw him this morning, aces. Dude's going to be up in no time.
Yeah.
He's going to be leading the parade. He's going to be, you know, cartwheel, the whole thing. And the guy tenses up. He scratches his throat. He starts pulling on the collar. You can tell it's a tense subject. And, oh, the Fuhrer says he's great. Like, oh, the Fuhrer will be so happy.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
See, John tenses up when they're told that. So it just leads me more into that notion of there is this strong divide between Japan and, you know, Nazi Germany.
And it's super
intriguing, like you said, in the way they shoot it, in the way that it's presented. Mm-hmm. Japan's or Nazis are clearly the dominant power.
Yeah, well, they have so much more technology. And I mean, even if you just look at the map in the beginning, it's the way that the country's divided, it's very clear who wears bigger pants. You know what I mean? It's very clear that the presence of the Nazis is greater, more powerful. They just control more territory and they have more resources. And we see it in the earlier episodes when they're talking about they're flying on jets, we're sailing on barges essentially across the Pacific. There's a huge disparity. And that's, one thing I want to know is how Tagomi and Rudolph met, because there's these two isolated people who, in the midst of all of this nationalism and industrialism have, you can sort of grab onto because they care about peace, because they care about, presumably, as far as we know now, they're trying to sort of equalize that disparity in order to preserve the peace. And where, how do these two strange, like, how do they find each other randomly through...
Togomi and Rudolph?
Yeah, Togomi-san and
Rudolph. Because he's a trade minister.
Yeah, he's a trade minister, and he is an...
and he's an, like, international businessman.
Yeah. Right, but how does that... like, how does that conversation come up?
You know,
you into treason? Yeah, do you like treason?
I met him at Bunko. Like what's the situation where these two just open up openly about their treason? Like, in that, to extrapolate on that, how does anybody find a collaborator? Like,
sure, what, I guess we see how difficult it is to try to join the resistance.
Yeah. Don't get me started because that's something I've always wondered more on, like, a moral, you know, like when it comes to cheating. I mean, which I get treason, you know, what, like. Relationshipal trees.
Oh, are you trying? Do you mean in the sense of like somebody cheating in a relationship?
Yeah.
How do you find someone who's willing to cheat with them plus the cheater?
Well, yeah, like how do you.
Are we talking about treason still?
Yes. Well, no,
she considers cheating treason.
Okay. No, I'm saying.
I treason.
I'm saying, to me, I've always wondered that when it comes to that, because it's like if everybody's married or everybody's taken, how does that conversation happen that you like throw it out there? Like, are you into this? Because, like, I might be in this. But if they're not, you can, like, recover.
Yeah. Right.
And so like, it's the same thing. You know what I mean? That has always bothered me.
I was just kidding.
I don't think
you're in treason? No.
I don't think if you, if you went that way, that would really, like, work out.
Right.
Knowing how the men of country feel and act about
so
that.
Adamant.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
And the chances that these two found each other were actually able to pull off something like what they presumably did, which is get some sort of plan.
And we, from everything I remember, we don't really know what Rudolph's business is, correct?
Because
could be how the conversation starts too, because maybe peace would benefit the type of business he's in. And so he's just would more inherently be motivated by that.
Yes, but because because we don't know, but also because we see him and Togomi sort of in a couple of scenes talk about moral issues. I don't necessarily think that he's in it for business gain, especially because it's such a high risk thing for him to be doing. Because it also seems like he, more so than Togomi, it seems like Rudolph really has nothing to gain other than trying to preserve the peace.
Okay.
He has nothing to gain other than a higher cause.
I would buy into that.
Because he's giving some Nazi technology. This is what I've gathered, at least. It's what I think is happening. Is he has a film with some Nazi technology that he's trying to give to the Japanese just to equalize the power to preserve the peace. You know what I mean?
Right.
So he really, more so than anyone, I think, would have to be approaching it from purely a moral stance. Nation benefits from his actions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Of course.
Like, his nation has increased
if they
technology.
Don't have peace, they're going to be the goners.
Well, that's
kind of a thing.
Also,
so it's like, we want peace because we're going to be out of here.
Exactly.
Otherwise.
And I think
that's our only plan of action.
Yeah.
I think Rudolph's motivation also comes, I mean, look at what he's gone through. This man did terrible things in the war. He knows he's done terrible things in the war. I think a lot of this is his way to make reparations towards the terrible things he's done.
Restitute.
If I can pay back for all those the damage I did in the war by saving hundreds of thousands of more lives in the future, maybe I break even. You know, maybe I don't feel as bad about myself for all the things
that I've done. The scene with him and John Smith where they're talking about the camps, and you just see the disparity. You see, I mean, that scene really captured the ideological differences between the two men of, okay, at what cost? Like, was it worth it? Like, the monstrosities. That's Rudolph's side. And then John Smith's side is, we live in a better world. Like he said, like the quote was, I think, this is better whiskey now, there's a better world now. Mm-hmm. It's like, that was atrocious. And we got to see that he was troubled about it because they talk about him sailing when
and
he was younger,
anymore,
too.
Yeah.
And he doesn't anymore.
And I like that.
It's like he's come to peace with it.
Gives him the human element, though.
Yeah,
too.
It
like,
does.
You know, that, because I don't think he's proud of things he did. I think he's proud of creating a better world.
Proud of what he's accomplished.
You know what I mean?
It's like the ends justify the means for him.
Yes,
absolutely.
For him.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But Juliana, so she doesn't get the job, we say, you know, clearly, because at the end of the episode, if you remember, we're not really sure.
Right.
Yeah.
We know she was approached, but we don't really know what happens. The necklace, you know, that whole thing. So she didn't get the job.
Right.
But then is called in for another job with somebody else, happens to want peace.
Yeah, you know, I loved seeing her with Tagomi. Mm-hmm. I loved seeing those two together. And even her mention of when she talked about Aikido and it talked about what's-his-face touching his throat.
I mean,
see that, like, that sort of mutualism that was going on between the two of them.
And I feel like that could be risky. I mean, because...
For sure.
Oh, gosh, I don't remember who it was, but it was very clear she was, like, the only white girl.
The only
white. You know what I mean?
Period.
Like, she's, the only Caucasian person, period.
That's why they hired her, actually.
Probably.
Yeah, specific. No, yeah. They mentioned because for the Germans to walk in to see...
That's right.
We want someone to see.
Yeah, they're like, okay, we feel more at ease now.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, she's the only one. Period. Yeah. At least until the end, and it seems like was I mistaken? There's a lot of Caucasian
people. So she was the only one that we saw in terms of Tagomi's realm. But then towards the end, we did get the reveal of her stepfather being. Actually, an operator running, like in a supervisory role, because he's pointing around, and pointer's always it.
I want to talk about this for a minute, because we don't get a lot of specifics about what was going on there, but there's, I think, a lot to infer. Mm-hmm. Were they deciphering code? Is that what was happening? It was this room full of
people deciphering code.
Oh, I have no idea what they were doing.
Okay.
I mean, and I don't think that we're supposed to know, and I don't think that... The point of it was to know what they're doing as much as for her to see him in there. You know what I mean?
Right.
But she got a code. Did you,
she picked up a piece of paper that had something on it. I think that
Sorry. I thought you meant like when she saw her.
No, I do. When she saw her.
Right. But I mean like what they were doing like behind the glass, not what all the girls were doing.
Oh, but they were bringing the stuff to them in the room. So I think it was all related.
Right, right. Well, no, they were, like, putting in the little inboxes.
Yeah.
Right.
In the little inboxes. So,
that are probably then further vetted and then taken to...
I guess what I'm sort of asking is just, like, what is that operation? Like, what is that whole room? Like, what is the Sakura room? Is it just, like,
I got the impression that they were listening to recordings or films.
Yeah, I think they're tapped phones and recordings.
It reminded me of, like 911 calls, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like a dispatcher office, but rather than people calling with emergencies, like they're just like NSA style listening.
Yeah, is that what it is? They're just listening in.
We're going to be flagged.
Because I know that there were a lot of rooms during World War II where like people were receiving code because, you know, all the different military operations talk to each other in code, and so you would try to crack the code and figure out. So if you could crack the code, then you could decipher all. You could just listen on the radio and decipher everything. And so everyone was constantly trying to crack the code, and then the codes were constantly changing. So I was like, is there still something? So I sort of like parallel thoughts. Either it's like an NSA style thing where like there's the realization like, oh, my stepdad knows every phone conversation that I've had or knows probably that I was at Canada, went to Kansas City.
Oh,
all this
I didn't
stuff.
Even think about it. There's that. Interesting.
Was that the reveal or was it this other weird thing where like there's something else going on outside this world? There's still like a war going on or something where these people are still trying to crack code. Or is it German code?
Okay,
I guess it could be German code.
Which
but...
makes me think, and again, we're like not even to predictions, but whatever, who cares, right? So maybe they haven't like fully really won the war. I don't know.
That's kind
you know
of
what I mean?
That's
like,
what was one of my thoughts, because it's like this seems like a room where they're trying to decipher war code.
What's going on?
Exactly. And why would they need to decipher war code?
If we're not at war.
If we're not
if
at war.
If the war is over.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Personally,
and that's what made me think it was like the films. You know,
right.
Like this is, but
it could be that too, though. So that's why I just kind of wanted to talk about it, because I don't know what's going on in that room, and I know it's important.
Off of that room, I think that we know that the Nazis, just by the traits of how.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger. Feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
operated are pretty conniving and mischievous and distrusting of everybody but themselves.
Right.
So this is a world where we've seen a clear discrepancy between the Japanese and the Germans.
Right.
I think that going even for the film and all of that, there's a disparagement between them and the military officials with the trade minister. Even right. They don't get along. So it's very clear that they don't trust each other, where the Germans right. do not trust the Japanese. So I'd have, they're in the Pacific States, that's where they live, and there's a German operation within this building that is running stuff. And so I'm thinking, but there was also Japanese officials in there. So
Wait, do you think that the room, that the Sakura room, you think that's a German operation?
Oh, it was ran by Germans. It was ran by, they were working for the Germans. Or is the stepfather working for the Japanese? Who was he working for?
I don't think that there's any way that they're working for the Germans inside of a major Japanese government building. So that to me, I mean, like, who knows? But like,
I mean, she's working for the rebels inside of the
major that's true. But like, that's a whole room and resource. Is dedicated to some sort of sophisticated operation.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I don't really understand how she walked in there with her little water tray, but she did. Because there was like an armored guard standing outside.
But it's her job to like clean, you know, because you saw her pick up the glasses.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
It's her job to like clean and clear or whatever.
Yeah. She just hides them in the door though. And
But I took that to mean that this is a Japanese operation. Mm-hmm. But I think that there is something really significant, and I think that's what made you think that it's a German operation, is that they were all Caucasian.
Yeah.
Everyone in that room, all of the operators were white. And that makes me go, okay, it's because they're listening to English code or I guess maybe German or maybe the German codes in English, because it seems like all the Germans speak English because they're it's in the US.
Well, yeah.
So are they listening to German code or are they listening to some sort of American war machine code? Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's probably German.
Time will tell.
Or are they just receiving, notice from the fatherland? Are they just getting?
But why would they? Why would they have a grasshopper bin?
Yeah, the fact that they have a bin labeled grasshopper.
Yeah,
and then it could just be a listening station. I mean, I think the most like simplistic ideal of it is that it's a listening station just to try to extrapolate, and then they can around the films.
Yeah,
I think that this is a setup episode, and we're gonna find out.
I think that you're exactly right. I think that's exactly.
And I
want to
talk about Frank.
Frank.
Yeah. I mean, this I feel like was kind of a big episode for him too.
I can't get on board with Frank.
He's in trouble. I mean, him and the arms dealer. Like, first of all, the arms dealer was in trouble.
Which, hello, we totally predicted that.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
I knew when he made a shtick about the ID card that he was going to be in trouble.
Oh yeah.
But
and he lied right off the get go when Keto comes in, and then he's like,
"Oh,
Keto actually,
knows.
My bad." Like,
Keto
like
knows.
You can't lie to this guy. Like,
what were you thinking? A village in Tibet?
Yeah,
like, he's gonna go to Tibet, and
that's the next episode.
And the
gonna open with him in Tibet.
Yeah, he's in Tibet.
And he's like, I don't see this
Inspector
guy.
Keto's in Tibet.
You know, it's a small village.
Yeah, that's the creepiest part. Is you know it's a small village. So
it's like you know I'm gonna find out that you are lying.
And in this episode alone, how much deception across the board? Everybody was put into a situation at some point in this episode where they were asked a question or they were interrogated by somebody with that person knowing they were being lied to.
Yeah.
Yes.
Keto knew he was being lied to. John knew he was being lied to.
Yeah.
I mean, Frank having the conversation with the dad lying. And the dad knew
totally.
He was lying because the dad works at the list. Like, you know,
right.
he works with
yeah.
the like,
yeah.
Everybody knows somebody else is lying.
That was the biggest motif is that no one's honest. And you can't be because you're under constant scrutiny. I mean, that's part of the world that they've established is you can't have a thought. You know, you can't act in any way that's not selfless for the state without being at risk. So you have an arms dealer who sells 3 bullets to a guy who wants to pay him a lot of money. Well, you know, he wants the money, so he sells the bullets, and now he's on the spot for that.
Which
and then you have, exactly. You have Juliana who wants to justify Trudy's death and figure out what's going on with the films, and you have Joe who wants to figure out what's going on with the grasshopper, and you have Rudolph who's trying. It's just all of these.
That was the thing I want to talk about. Frank.
Okay.
They got in a huge fight, him and Juliana, and you kind of see for the first time that they're not just sort of like living. I don't even know what the right. Like, they're finally acknowledging that, like, they're clashing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it feels like it's all been unspoken up to this point.
I love that scene.
I mean,
I think it's a really well done scene.
I mean, and again, like, that last, what, maybe 8-10 minutes was saved it for me. You know what I mean? Kind of really justified all the setup. Because it's like, okay, now we see the motivation behind the setup. So, but I also really liked, because I think kind of like we talked, I think it was in the episode one with Trudy's death sort of being somewhat, I don't want to say dismissed, because obviously it's come back up, but in the moment, like, you know, we wanted that little minute of peace to say, like, holy crap, you know? And I love that, you know, Frank goes home and they do the prayer, you know, and they have this, like, completely Jewish moment, like,
another
honoring
really
their roots.
Fantastic
having,
scene.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they, he, what did he say? Something about, like, it's one thing to, like, lose your loved ones. It's another one to...
To not be allowed to mourn for
them. You know, like, like, to not be allowed... However, but the point, you know, just kind of like, wow, he hasn't. He hasn't even been allowed to be sad and to mourn and grieve the loss of his sister and family, you know.
And then we see
him, we get to. Yeah, and I... Yeah. And that was kind of the thing with Frank where I'm like, okay, they don't want us to hate him. You know, they just... No, I mean, because he's... All of his actions are kind of questionable because it seems like they're all pretty directionless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and now he's also totally getting set up with the cowboy picture. And they're like, oh, yeah, the man and his son saw the shooter with this picture. Or, you know, the gun,
with the
this
pistol.
Picture. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So...
And
he wasn't framed, I don't think, but
he also has a shot fired from his gun too.
Right, he's going to be, I think, kind of taking the heat for that.
Yeah, if he gets caught, yeah, I kind of hope he does.
Well, we know
but
how Keith feels.
Do it.
I mean, the man went wild wielding a gun in a crowd. Regardless of what he did. Come
wild
on.
Wild wielding. Yeah. I mean,
that's a valid point.
He didn't,
point.
Like, do one of these.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
He pulled it out with a hand that he just got shot in. He just got shot in that arm. He pulls it out, shows it to the kid next to him, gets scared, puts it up, and then watches the prince get shot. That would have been fine if someone else didn't shoot the prince, but he didn't even come what he... He didn't even do what he came there with a gunshot wound to do.
Follow through, Frank.
So he doesn't follow through.
He can't win with you.
He can't. He's a quitter.
And then now he's sort of in it with his arms dealer where they kind of have to both be safe. And I'm sorry, I think that gun's going to be found and the shots are taking out. They're going to trace it back to him because they came to his place of work. I mean, they came to his place of work. Like,
numerous times, right?
And asked specifically about him. Like, they already have something on him.
Yeah.
And totally. Whether it came through the Sakura room or something like that, I don't know. I don't know how they have it on him, but they do. So I think he's going to take the heat. I think he's absolutely going to take the heat. And yeah, I mean, he kind of had it coming.
All right, well, let's officially start predictions get this on the road.
Oh, here we go.
And now, you're After Buzz TV.
Lay that beat down.
Yeah, it's the ghost of After Buzz.
I mean, we've kind of already been predicting a little bit here.
We've had a lot of it, sorry.
So, I mean, we've seen a lot of setup. Mm-hmm. And I will say I'll keep it to this just for time's sake. My biggest prediction is I actually think that Joe, it's so cliche for him to just, like, be set up like that and get caught and, like, get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he's, like, passing the test, you know? Wanted him, you know, the papers are blank for a reason and he's going to explain, you know, and I feel like, because they wouldn't have shown us Smith down there. Yeah.
At the
like
end.
Catching. I feel like.
Also, the way he turned around, I 100% agree. He didn't turn around like, oh, snap. It was like.
Like, are we going to get into this and like talk about this? Like,
it was,
I'm committed now, you know? Like, you have me.
Yeah.
I feel like that's how I feel. I feel like the Joe and John relationship, he turns around. He had just spoken to Rudolph, and Joe gave him the right answer that he was looking for, which is follow country and turn around. John has never once showed sympathy in anything he's ever done. He does not show sympathy. It's just not something he does. I think that the only reason that Joe is not going to get a bullet in his head after this from John is only if it's because John thinks he can use him for a better purpose, for something that he needs, or because he thinks that because he said something and stuck with country, that he may be winnable to tilt back over and be the proper soldier and the mentee that he wants him to be. I think he strongly wants him to be the mentee, so I feel like he'll give him a chance. I just don't think he'll kill Joe because Joe and Juliana are going to end up together, and we all know
exactly.
That. Frank's
going
to be out of the picture.
We all know. Yeah, exactly. That's why Frank needs to get out of the picture so that can happen.
Joe can move in.
I think, I don't know. I'm kind of torn because there is a good, like, on the one hand, yeah, Obergruppen Führer is sort of ruthless and would put a bullet in someone's head, no question. But I feel like this was not necessarily think that that was failing the test, because if you look at it from John Smith's perspective, he still hasn't seen Joe do anything treasonous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's no right. treachery. It's curiosity.
That's true.
It's him being interested in this one state affair, this one matter of state. Who is what's the grasshopper? Well, what's the film? Who's the man in the high castle?
His interest was set up.
Yeah.
I mean, again, this all, you know, like,
well, he was teased with
that,
it.
No, but I'm saying that's why he was the one that had to take the film. Like, it's one of those things where I feel like Smith knew the whole time, like, he sent him out there to fail on this mission. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He was never going to get done what he was sent to do. So I almost feel like it's one of those things where all of it was, like, leading up to this, where it's like, okay, now we're going to have a conversation, and, like, I'm going to really tell you what's going on when it comes to X, Y, or Z. Because we only have 4 more episodes.
Yeah. Well, and really, we've got to move fast, right? Yeah. But really, what John Smith learns from this is just that Joe has such a strong interest in this one matter, such a strong curiosity, that nothing will stop him, in a way. Like, he would sneak around and do it.
At that high of a level.
He would take a huge risk.
That's exactly
to get more information. Maybe that makes him the perfect candidate.
That's what I'm saying.
After having seen.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's where Smith, like, that was the test, and that's why I think he's not in trouble, because it's like, okay, you really will go to any length to get info on this, or to, you know, to see this through, so you're my guy, because... Right. I mean, you know who I am, like an initiation style. And it's also one of those where it's like, I think he also, again, like, coincidence, seeing Rudolph at the airport. And I mean, I don't know if he would have known or whatever that he would be there, since he got the diplomatic ticket and all of that, you know. But it's one of those things where he probably, that it wasn't accidental that Joe saw him send away, like, his, one of his best
closest
buddies.
Friends,
like, you know what I mean? Kind of saying, like, I will break those bonds for a country.
Right.
If you cross me.
For sure.
You know, really giving him
just
the extreme.
At this point, you didn't know.
If there was any doubt, you know, and setting him up for all of that, you know.
Yeah.
And so if he's still willing to take the risk after that.
Which he does immediately. Oh,
yeah. Who keeps the keys under the liquor bottle?
John Smith was probably sitting over in the chair, like over in the dark corner, just waiting
the whole
for it
time.
To happen.
Yeah, he got the keys. 5 minutes.
Any other predictions?
Well, yeah, I think that, I mean, we know that John's mother-in-law is dead 2 years. So he had to know that Rudolph was there. So it was very conniving to bring Joe along. To pick up Rudolph. He was clearly going there to pick up Rudolph. That's why he was headed to the airport.
Oh, absolutely.
So John's witnessed him go pick up Rudolph, knowing that it was a lie. He's witnessed him turn over one of his closest friends to the Nazi party, knowing that God knows what's going to happen to him. And then afterwards, he's, all right, well, here we go. I'm about to sneak down there, go in the room and do it. I think that there's no way John kills him, because I don't think he would have put that whole masquerade on for Joe. The whole thing was a show for Joe.
Right. It really was.
But do you guys have any other predictions?
Yeah, well, that's what I was getting to.
Oh, okay.
Is that he's not going to do anything to Joe. He's going to push Joe to working for him against his will. I think he's going to give him a die or do what I want scenario. You obviously can't be trusted. I need you for some grander purpose. Die or do what I want.
Which kind of, in a nutshell, sounds like Nazism.
Yeah.
If you think about it, it's do what I want or die. I think that my prediction is going to be on the other side of the country. Mm-hmm. I think that there's going to be, especially now that Rudolph's sort of out of the picture, I think that Togomi and Juliana are going to have sort of a conspiracy. They're going to have a sharing of information, if you will, one way or the other. And it could just be wishful thinking, because that's what I want to happen, but I also predict that's what's going to happen.
I like it.
You're allowed. You're allowed to have your predictions align with your desires.
Yes, they do. In this one instance, they do.
Well, is there any last thoughts before we say goodnight?
I don't believe so. Yeah. I want to see episode 7.
I want to see episode 7. I just got to give some serious accolades to the actors. I think that as an acting standpoint, away from the story in itself, this was all of their best episode when
definitely
it comes to acting.
For
they
sure.
all knocked
and
out of the park.
So much growth.
I will say, because I don't know what about that just made me think of it, the whole name of this episode, Three Monkeys, the Hear No Evil, See No Evil, Speak No Evil.
Yeah, right.
I never knew that was...
It's the monkeys with the...
Yeah. I'm like mind blown. I never knew that that was all connected.
It's a wood carving at like a temple in Japan. Mm-hmm.
I had no idea. Yeah. See, you learn something new every day. Even from being in the High Castle. Even from watching TV online.
That's how I learn most things, actually.
Is it? Okay, yeah. Well, then I guess I just need to catch up.
Yeah. We should all catch up. We can all learn more.
Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We are always happy to be here. Go on iTunes, rate us, tell us if you like our show, tell us what you like, what you don't like, ask us questions, tweet us, all of those things. I'm your host, Cordy Henderson.
I'm Keith W. Black. You can find me at Keith W. Black all over the internet, or if you're right on YouTube, I'll go on and get back to you.
Yeah, and my name is Taylor Bolt. You can find me on Twitter at Taybolt, T-A-Y-B-O-L-D-T, or on Instagram at Tbolt. Thank you, guys.
Right. Have a great night.
We'll see you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.